I hope everyone is well.
Grandma, you can leave off the tie. Just keep, make sure you keep the shirt on, all right?
The tie, I wouldn't know what to do with that. When I go on vacation, I wear a tie. Just it's like part and parcel of who I am. Right. Okay, Rabbi Yisai, let's just discuss a little bit about the parsha. We have a lot to get to this morning. And I want to still finish a little bit about Metzitza B'Peh from last week. What Rabbi Asher Weiss holds on Metzitza B'Peh, what the Satmar Rebbe held on Metzitza B'Peh. A little controversy, of course, and then we move on to our next sugya at hand. Just want to talk a little bit about the parsha for a few minutes. In parsha's Bahaloyscha, we find in the beginning, first Rashi tells us that Aaron HaKohen was disturbed. Chol Shadaita, he was somewhat depressed over the fact that he nor his shevet participated in the Chanukas HaMizbeach. So Hashem tells him, don't worry, your reward is much larger. You're going to get something much bigger than all of them. You're going to get the ability to light the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. So in previous years, we spoke about the kasha that the Mefarshim have. Chaim Shmuel Levitz addresses this at length in his Sichas Musar. He addresses the question of, why was the menorah such a comfort? What was so great about the menorah? There are a lot of things that only Aaron was able to do. So why was the menorah singled out as the thing that brought him comfort? And we spoke about that in the past. What I want to speak about today is the premise of Aaron HaKohen. What was Aaron HaKohen's premise? Aaron HaKohen's premise is that I want to also do what they did. Now, as any good parent knows, that at some point, you have to tell certain children that this is for them and this is not for you. And children want to do everything, but they can't. The older kids get to do certain things, and the younger kids get to do other things. And there's not always the same bedtime for everyone, and not everyone gets to go on the same places and the same activities. So why didn't Hashem just tell Aaron HaKohen, Aaron HaKohen, how much more do you need? You get to go Lefnai Lefnim Yom Kippur. You get to be Makdi Diktaris. You get everything. You can't give a little bit to something to someone else. So the answer is Aaron HaKohen wasn't coming as jealousy. Aaron HaKohen wasn't saying, I want what they have. Aaron HaKohen was saying is that I am so happy for them. I'm thrilled for the Nisiyan that they have the right to do Chanukas HaMizbech. But this was an opportunity for me to also grow in years in Avodas Hashem. Aaron HaKohen looked at every mitzvah as one big opportunity to go closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in his mind, everything is an opportunity. Everything that's not obtained is a missed opportunity. So Aaron HaKohen wasn't jealous of the Nisim. He wasn't fatained because of the Nisim. Fakek. He was thrilled with the Nisim. He was upset that this was an opportunity for him also to tap into Avodas Hashem. And he did not want that opportunity to go wasted. To which Hashem said, I appreciate your desire and your cheshek, but it's going to come in a different venue. Because when it comes to Avodas Hashem, there's never enough. There's never a concept of I'm good, I'm full, I don't need anything more. Now we know the havdil in the financial world. You very rarely hear a very successful person say, you know, I made enough money, that's it. I don't need to try harder. You're constantly trying, coming up with new ideas, new business ventures, because that's just the way we are. We always want more. See, when it comes to spirituality, we often say, no, I'm okay. You know, I'm better than the guy down the block. I'm better than the guy who used to sit next to me in shul. I'm okay. So Aaron HaKohen is teaching us we have to have shifas, we have to have goals. Mediocrity should not be our baseline responsibility. And it's sad because we live in a generation where for that many people are very comfortable with what we call today mediocrity. I've heard this from many parents when they're picking different schools for their children. They'll tell me, you know what? I'm happy if my kid does this. You know, I'm happy if he's Shomer Shabbos. That should not be our level of acceptance, I think, in 2020 with all that we have accessible to us. Maybe 50 years ago, 60 years ago, that was what every parent dreamed of their child. But today when we have shuls and yeshivas at every corner and we have shiurim and Torah everywhere, I think to say that I'm happy if my kid stays firm, I think it's shooting pretty low. I think Aaron HaKohen teaches us we're supposed to shoot much higher than that. Every opportunity we should try to grab at. We should try to reach every height that's possible and not sell ourselves short. We find the similar idea by Pesach Sheni. These people come to Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, Lomani Gara, why should we lose out? So everyone has the kashrut, why should you lose out? Because it's not shaykh, you're tameh, you're out of the parsha. The answer is they're coming with the same claim. They're coming with a claim that we don't want excuses. We don't want excuses. We want to be part of Avodas Hashem. We want to be connected to growing. We want to be connected to spirituality. We're not looking for excuses. And that's what I think Pshat is in the Gemara. The Gemara in Sukkah says, it says in the Torah that these people came to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara asks, Anashim Elami, who were these people? And the Gemara gives three pshatim. So the Mefarshim all bothered with the kasha. Who cares who they were? Why is it relevant for us to know who they were? So I believe the answer is that Chazal telling us they all had the best excuse in the book for why they couldn't have brought carbon Pesach. Either they were carrying Yosef's bones, or they were being metamet and other aviyu, or they were metamet for Meis Mitzvah. Those are the best excuses in the world. Which means they should have had no problem saying to themselves, Hashem, I'm excused. No guilt, no nothing, no pressure. It's an excuse. It's the best excuse. Carrying Yosef's bones is not the best excuse in the book. The answer is these people weren't looking for excuses. They weren't looking for heterim. They were looking for ways to find connection, to be able to grow more in Avodah Hashem, not the opposite, not backwards. Right? Many people call up with shaylos. They're already looking for the heter. The question is, where's the heter going to be? Is the heter going to be this way? The heter is going to be that way. The way it should be is, no, I'm calling up to see what Hashem wants of me. If He wants me to be matir, then I should be matir. If He wants me to be machmir, I should be machmir. So this parasha teaches us the idea where we try to find ways to not run away from obligations of spirituality, but to run towards. Right? Firefighters run towards the fire, everyone else runs away from the fire. We should be running towards Avodah Hashem, not looking for ways to be exempt. The Satmar Rebbe has a gevaldik gevor in this week's parsha, which we'll mention, because we're going to talk about Satmar Rebbe in a few minutes, a little later in the shir. We know that the only one of the Klei HaMishkan that were not passed down from Dor to Dor was the Chatzotzeres. In this week's parsha, we learned about the Chatzotzeres, the trumpet. And one of the roles of the trumpet was to be a mass email. It was to gather the people together when Moshe Rabbeinu had a message that he wanted to impart to the people. So the Satmar Rebbe points out, why was it that the Chatzotzeres were only for Moshe Rabbeinu, not for future generations? So the Satmar Rebbe explains that you have to understand, in every generation there's a certain tool that's given to reach the people, to get the word out to the mass. That can't be passed down from one generation to the next. Each generation has their specific tool that's going to accomplish what they need to accomplish. And I think it's very true. The world we live in today with technology, you know, many people say, you know what, let's forget technology. But you're not going to reach the mass that way. We have to embrace what technology has given us in each generation. There was a big discussion with this whole satellite learning. Should kids learn on Zoom? Should kids learn on the phone? And it's split in the different types of community. Some communities will only allow phone and other communities allow Zoom. In my opinion, my humble opinion, again, I'm not weighing in on a heavy situation question like this, is that I think we have to ask ourselves, what are the kids more used to? Sadly enough, most of our children, again, Eretz Yisrael is slightly different, but at least in most of our communities, the children are more used to looking at a screen than they are listening to a phone. So if you want your kids to spend 6 to 8 hours a day listening to a phone, it's not really going to grab them. Mashenki, if you put them in front of a screen, kids will watch anything that's in front of a screen, even if it's educational. So we have to ask ourselves, what is the best way to reach our generation? If it's through email, then we use emails. If it's through texting, it's texting. We have to always ask ourselves, what is the best way to get a hold of our generation? And if it's through social media, it's got to be through... Again, I'm not saying we have to always lower ourselves to the game around us. But if we can create... And we've used Zoom and social media to do amazing things in Klal Yisrael's in the last couple of months. We've used it for Torah, for Chesed, to get the word out, to spread medical information and the like. So I think this word, the Satmar Rebbe, is very essential for us to realize that we sometimes have to ask ourselves, what's the best mode to get the youth involved, or to get the next generation involved, or to reach the mass in a way that we couldn't have done before? Yes, you know, they used to have, you know, robocalls and mass callings, but today an email is much quicker, a text message, things like that. It's a whole different world. You know, there's a dispute amongst Rabbanim. Should Rabbanim answer Shailas via email, text, and WhatsApps? My policy always is, because yes, because if not, they're not going to ask. There are people that are embarrassed, especially if it's private issues, Taras Mishpacha and other issues. They just don't feel comfortable talking to a rabbi on the phone, right or wrong. It's irrelevant at the moment. But if we can have a platform where people feel comfortable using social technology, I think we just opened up a platform of people that will now ask more Shailas than they've ever asked before. So, you know, people say, well, our grandparents didn't do it that way. That's definitely true, but our great-grandparents also didn't have indoor plumbing. So if you're willing to give up your indoor plumbing, we can have a conversation about using technology. Again, it has to be used properly.
Rabbi, not to be political, but that's the big argument with this, you know, Etzah Halacha.
Yes.
Not more women are asking Taras Mishpacha.
That's correct.
And even the rabbis acknowledge it. They all acknowledge a lot more women are coming forward asking Mishpacha, since they're more comfortable asking
100%, and I can't say I don't blame them. If I was a woman, I'd probably also find it uncomfortable. But again, we Rabbanim are trying to make it as comfortable as possible. I found many women feel very comfortable just to send a WhatsApp or an email or a text. It's less, you know, and they can express themselves that way without having to have a phone conversation or even or in person conversation. But again, I think we have to embrace again with whatever allows us from a halachic standpoint. And then I'm not going to get involved in...
Disclaimer, that's not my position.
No, I mean...
but it's something I have to answer.
It's a position of young Israel with me.
Right. This was part of Rabbi Willig's discussion. This was part of Rabbi Willig's argument from last Tuesday night.
About there are those that want them, I have to respond.
Right, this was Rabbi Willig's argument, supposedly, in that letter in 2015.
It's on social media already,
Stewie. David Pollock already is...
Stewie is now going to have armed guards in front of his house. Okay, good. Supported, sponsored by the Young Israel Women. Okay, in any case, this is a question. But I think it's an important message for all of us. You know, we grapple with this. You know, obviously, I grew up in a generation different than many of you. You grew up with none of this technology. I grew up with a little bit of it. But when we try to connect to our to the next generation, we find it hard to relate to them. We have to sometimes get into their world, get into their mind. I'm not saying we have to always lower ourselves to be like them. And we're not expecting everyone to be a teenager again or to act like a teenager. But sometimes you have to realize what goes through their mind. And we have to try to connect to them in that manner. One last vart. I found interesting in this week's parasha, last week's parasha, we find a very interesting conversation between Yisroi and Moshe Rabbeinu. It's the reversal of every other conversation that takes place between a father-in-law and a son-in-law. Yisroi is leaving and Moshe begs him to stay. It's usually the opposite. The son-in-law is trying to get the father-in-law out of the house. But here Moshe Rabbeinu is begging for Yisroi to stay. Now this wasn't because Yisroi was supporting Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was independently wealthy. Yisroi was not supporting him. Yet the Torah tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu is begging Yisroi to stay, and it's not clear why. So I found the Rabbeinu Bechai, which I found very, very, very comforting for the generation where we live in today. Rabbeinu Bechai writes that there was a group of people at that time that were mekatnei amona. They lacked amuna. They didn't believe that a cloud is going to be able to guide them through the desert. They wanted a human being to guide them. They wanted a real tour guide, a guy like Yisroi, who knew the streets and knew the alleys and knew the midbar. They felt more comfortable with Yisroi guiding them. So Moshe Rabbeinu was asking, Yisroi, stay around. You'll be our tour guide to navigate us through the complications of the midbar. So what I found interesting about this Rabbeinu Bechai is, let's remember what we're talking about. We're talking about a generation of people that just saw Kriyas Yamsuf, a generation of people who just saw Yisroi Mitzrayim, and they're still Mekatnei Emunah. And on top of that, Hashem doesn't yell at them and says, guys, get your act together. Hashem says, I understand. And therefore, I will give you a person that will calm your ease and make this easier for you. So I think Rabbeinu Bechai is teaching us that Emunah is not a simple thing. Many of us, I think, grapple with Emunah from time to time. Finding Yad Hashem and understanding Yad Hashem, especially these last few months, with all that the world was turned upside down, it's very hard often to understand Hashem's plan. So we lack Emunah. We're Mekatnei Emunah. So instead of Hashem yelling at them, Hashem said, you're right. It's hard. I'm going to give you something to make it a little easier. Which means Hashem understands that we grapple with Emunah. Hashem understands it's not a small thing. Emunah is large. There's many components, many parts to it. And we grapple with it on a daily basis. But Hashem tries and Hashem understands. So if often we have a yurida when we ask ourselves, oh my gosh, I don't understand what Hashem is doing, I don't think we should feel guilty about it. I think we should realize that's normal, teva adam. It happened to the Dar Hadeya, who saw Yad Hashem much clearer than we do today. And sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us certain things and certain messengers in our life to give us some guidance, to give us some hadracha, to make it a little easier for us to navigate the complications that is life. Okay, today's learning should be Lezchus Refuah Shleima for David. You're with us today?
Yeah, Peril.
Peril.
Yenta.
Peril Yenta, Bas.
Rinda.
And
Chaya Rachel.
Chaya Rachel.
Bas.
Alta Hudja Zisa, as well as Yechiel Yaakov Ben Esther, as well as a special Lezecha Nishmas for Leib Ben Yaakov Yitzchak, which is Jeff Rohr's father, whose yard site is coming up. When, Jeff?
Tuesday,
Mes Hashem. I didn't have the pleasure of knowing.
Last year you gave us bagels and lox.
Yes.
They're virtually being delivered to your door as we speak.
Send us a new big coupon.
I did not have the pleasure of knowing Jeff's father, but I do have the pleasure of knowing Jeff for quite some time, and I got the pleasure of meeting Jeff's children and getting to know them very well, and I can say that your father raised his children and grandchildren in a very beautiful way, in a way that I know is bringing much, much aliyah to his neshama. Over the years, Jeff, I got to know you well, and I see the way you operate. And the way you operate is you want to know what the right thing is. You're not looking for leniencies. You're not looking for kulas. You're not looking for the easy way out. We've spoken about some complicated chosh mishpat shaylas in the past. And there was money at stake. And your answer always was, I want to do what is right. So clearly your father instilled in you, and you, Baruch Hashem, passed it along to your children. Your son, Rabbi Rohr, is a well-known Rebbe here in YCQ, not far from my house. But I got to know more about him, realizing how big of a masmid he is. How he stays up till quite late evenings while juggling his job and his Kanai Nahara large family, doing the daf and other limudim. So all of these things, Baruch Hashem, is going to be an amazing schus for your father's neshama on his yard today. May Hashem, all the great things that you and all your children and grandchildren do should be a schus for his neshama.
Okay. Rabbi, Rabbi, can I add one more for a good friend of mine who needs your full shleima? Yehuda Zev Ben Esther.
Yehuda Zev Ben Esther as well, Refuah Shleima, B'Sarich Shachar LiYisrael. We left off the last...
I'm sorry, Rabbi, can I just add one more?
Please, sadly enough, yes.
beneath the eyesight of a friend of many of us who probably from the community know him. His name is Beryl Schwartzblatt. Today's his yard site is Dov Ber and Chaim Aryeh.
Okay, so our learning today and all the learning that are done today and all the good deeds that are done should be a schus for his neshama as well. We left off the last couple of weeks, we were discussing Mitzitz of a Peh, a controversial topic both in Halacha and Hashkafa and in Lundis, but I just wanted to read to you what Rav Asher Weiss says on the topic from the Sefer Minchas Asher. This is the Likutim, I don't know if you can see, this is the Likutim that was printed out in honor of when Reb Shai made a bris a few years ago, Tav Shin Ayin Ches, 2 years ago, when he put together different pieces of Minchas Asher. As far as I know, not everything is from other places in Minchas Asher, some stuff is new. But where here Rav Asher Weiss discusses the issue of Mitzitza Peh, and he writes, I'll read it to you because it was just a little too complicated to photocopy everything. But he basically writes the following. He goes through a lot of the Maamar Kermes that we've quoted in the past, and he says that in the year Tav Shin Ayin Aleph, which is 2001, and the beginning of 2002, he says, Niskalu b'Yerushalayim mispa tinoike shechol b'machlais herpes. Apparently there was a breakout of babies in Yerushalayim that had herpes, that they had herpes after they had their bris. And everyone connected it to Mitzitz Lepet, as they've been doing for the last 300 years. We saw that already in the Tshuvas. The first time the baby gets an infection right away, everyone blames it on the Moya. So Rav Asher Weiss writes, so, Achra Hayaladim Nifku B'machoy V'nisha Nichbu L'chol Yom Yichayev, one of them had brain damage that affected him for the rest of his life. One of the babies died from it. It was really tragic what was happening to these babies post the bris. So they came to Rav Asher Weiss and they were trying to figure out what to do. So he writes over here, the first thing he did was, he went to the doctors. He turned to the doctors and he asked them, is it possible that it came from the moil to Mitzitz Bepeh? And after he got clarity from the doctors, then Rav Asher Weiss rendered his psak. And what was his psak? He writes the following. It is obviously terrible to stop doing mitzitza or to find other avenues that are not really mitzitza. You have to get the blood out of the distant places, and therefore you got to do real mitzitza. And then he writes over here, he says, he says, I think technically some form of a tool that is going to be mafsik between your mouth, a suction tool, a tube. But he writes, the mekomo gemiesh kam mitzitz bepeh. Ach, however, says Rav Asher, kimishen is bar mikdivik gedol ha-kabol, shetzorach limtzeis dafka bepeh. Since it's brought down, I'll pick kabol, that it needs to be bepeh. V'oyim b'vor b'kabol, de'ena mitzitz mishum sakon b'vad, there's other things here. Therefore, says Rav Asher, I'm not overly comfortable switching over to using a tube. I'd rather stick with using the peh itself. And then he writes, but again, we had another outbreak and they tumbled about it. And he concludes, he says like this, Om the Mbar, the Afim Meduba Bachuzim Atim, even if it's a small percentage, Ein Holchim Bepikuach Nefesh Achai Roiv, we don't go after the majority, the Eishlas is Kol Shabi Adenu Limnoim and Atinoike Sakana Devex Vamach. We have to do whatever we can do to prevent dangerous things from happening to the baby. But then he quotes from Shmuel Vosner, who writes that the Hasibu Shleinok, the same reason why we don't do Metzitz Bepa on a Godel, is because we're afraid here also. Then he writes, "Oy nearly I day roif is there. Shemitech arba mikarim shubadak ishus hoydush ne moilim shachin hoylam peta bepiim." He says many of the moilim admitted later that the reason why things went wrong was because they had some form of infection, some cut, some herpes in their mouth that they didn't check before. Therefore, pasuk Rav Asher at the end of the piece he writes, "Umishum kach nira the eish lahavi lemodas amoalim." You have to notify the moilim. Shekol sheish le peta bepiv. Anyone does anything in his mouth, a sore, also loylas is mitzitz bepeh. He is not allowed to do mitzitz bepeh. If the male doesn't feel well or he has fever, that's all dangerous. In that case, he should do it through something else. However, says Rav Asher, if everything else is going well, then he thinks you should go back to the way things are. Then he quotes over again that he heard from two Moilim, Rav Moshe Weisberg and Chaim Miller, that they met with Rav Eliashim and Chaim Kanevsky, and they say, you can definitely use this tube, the Shastat Chak. Now, obviously, Rav Asher Weiss is basically saying in a nutshell that if you think there's something going on in your mouth, you should not do Mitzitz Bepeh. However, I have spoken to doctors who have told me sometimes the herpes you can't detect it yet. Very nice. I mean, that makes sense. If you wake up the day of the meal and you feel you have something in your mouth, then obviously don't do Mitzitz Bepeh. But often, I understand you can't always detect it and it might be under the skin. So, Halach L'maisa of Rav Asher, he also adds that he thinks you should use mouthwash or something like that to try to clean it out and try to disinfect the area. So, he's sticking with the idea that we don't want to change the Mesira, but while definitely grappling with the reality that herpes is an infectious disease that could be passed from the mother to the baby, unlike Dr. Berman, who writes at least in one of his essays, he doesn't believe that's the case. But Rav Asher seems to be more open to that. And obviously, he's acknowledged that if a Moyle thinks that he's not feeling well, in any case, he should not do Metzisa B'peh. He should definitely use some form of a Shveiferes. He should use some form of a tube, which we've spoken about was invented in the mid to late 1800s. So that was Rav Asher Weiss's opinion. Back to the Satmar Rebbe. Again, I urge you all to buy the book if you don't have it yet, the Rebbe. It's a great, great book. Very controversial. You have to be able to sometimes, I guess, put aside your different views that he had on some topics because he was very adamant about many of his shita. So over here, he writes the following. I'm just going to read it to you because, again, it's a little hard to copy. He writes, another innovation against which the Rebbe fought was the practice of doing mitzitza with a tube instead of the mouth. The Rebbe held that that a Shabbos bris mitzitza with a tube is a violation of Shabbos. Why? Because the Rebbe held that mitzitza bepeh is not mekayim the mitzvah. So if you're not mekayim the mitzvah, all you do is extracting blood, shaloi b'makom mitzvah, so that's chilul Shabbos. So the Satmar Rebbe held azoy vayt that mitzitza bepeh ayidei shveiferes is not a mitzitza, so all you're doing is extracting blood, shaloi l'shav, for no reason. That's chavolah, shaloi b'makom mitzvah. That's a violation of Issur Shabbos. And that's a very big chiddush. I mean, the Satmar Rebbe is willing to acknowledge that there's absolutely nothing accomplished when you use a shveiferes, not even b'dieved, not even b'shas chak. Nothing is accomplished. That's the chayra a little hard to understand. And then he goes on to say another chiddush. He also ruled that if the baby is still in the hospital on the eighth day of his life and the hospital does not allow oral mitzitza, so let's ask ourselves this shayla. The baby's in the hospital on the eighth day and the hospital says you cannot absolutely, we'll let you bring a moilin, but you cannot bring a moilin who's going to do mitzitza bepeh. So we now the balancing act starts. Do you say to yourself, well, mila b'zmani mitzvahi? Or do you say, no, it's better to do mila shalei b'zmanoi, but to do the mila kitikuna? So, in my Litvisha approach, my non-Hasidish background, I would have said, what are you talking about? Mila b'zmane is a mitzvah. Mitzitza b'peh might only be, at best, medicinal. So which one's better? Of course mila b'zmane wins. It's a no-brainer. However, writes the Satmar Rebbe, as does others. It's not just the Satmar Rebbe. Others say this also, that what? That if the hospital does not allow it, you should postpone the bris until the mitzvah can be done properly. That's a gewaltig chiddush. That means the Satmar Rebbe was of the opinion that mitzitza, i.e. anything else besides for a peh, is not mitzitza. It's nothing, it's zero, garnish. And therefore, if you do it on Shabbos, you're mechalal Shabbos. And if you do it on day 8, that's not mitzvah kitikune. It's a very, very big
thing. So would he hold, Rabbi, that yes. The child is an orel?
So that we spoke about already from the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer who held that mitzitza bepeh is a chelik of the milah, but he held it's not one of the chalakim that make the milah, that make the baby an orel. Even those achrayim that are of the opinion that mitzitza bepeh is part and parcel of the milah, we still don't believe that it renders the baby an oral. Yes, it would not be an oral, but the achrayim speak it out in that way.
But if you hold the mitzitza with the shofar is not accomplishing anything, it's not going to be chilul Shabbos doraisa because then it's a malach hashem nitzrich
l'gufa. Correct. That's a good point. It would be a malach hashem nitzrich l'gufa. Correct. It would be at least an ester banan. Might be makalkel or all that. So
the b'makom mitzvah, maybe you should do it then.
But he holds it's not a mitzvah. As far as he's concerned, this is useless.
We're going to delay Mila Doraisa.
Yeah. It's a gewaltig chiddush. I think it's an amazing chiddush. I think it's an amazing chiddush from the Satmar Rebbe. But again, he's not the only one who said it. But again, in my Litvish upbringing, I would have never ruled in such a way. I think we all would have said to ourselves, based on 3 weeks of learning Mitzitza B'peh, maybe 4 weeks, that Mitzitza B'peh is medicinal. At best, it's medicinal, not a chelik of the Mila, and there's no reason why it should trump Mila B'yayim HaShemini. But it gets better. Then he writes over here, at a bris, the Rebbe met Rebbe Avrom Yafin, Rosh Yeshiva of Nevardik, and the two debated the issue of postponing a bris in order to do Mitzitza B'peh. At one point in the argument, the Rebbe said, if you don't agree that mitzitza is essential to the mitzvah, then you will have to say that all the tzaddikim of the past were mechalal Shabbos when they did mitzitza on Shabbos. Don't exactly understand what that argument is, but that was the Satmar Rebbe's argument. Now it gets better. Whenever the Rebbe had an opportunity to speak outside of his community, such as during his trips to Chicago and Toronto, he would exhort the people to fulfill the mitzvah of mitzitza as it was done in past generations. He would often say that the failure to perform bris milah properly in America might be the one reason for the terrible state of immodesty in the country. That I quoted last week in the Maamar Kaimis. We mentioned this from the Satmar Rebbe. He quoted based on Arizal, that Arizal said if the bris milah is done properly, then it's a schooler for the baby not to have taiva and not to do arayis. So the Satmar Rebbe suggested the reason why today in America we have such immodesty in our community, not the secular world, is because we're not doing mitzitza b'peh. And then he quotes the Rambam and the Arizal, which we already saw. And then we'll just leave off with this. He writes, in a conversation with the Helmut Sarov in 1968, the Rebbe named three halachic subjects widespread problems he wished to write extensively about. One was mitzitza with the mouth, the other one was the importance of ending Shabbat 72 minutes after sundown, and the incorrect practice of using machine-made ice for mikvahs. Unfortunately, the Rebbe had a stroke later that year and was unable to fulfill his wish. Yet, at least in the matter of Metzitza with the mouth, the Rebbe succeeded remarkably, and nowadays among the Hasidic communities, Metzitza with the tube is unheard of. I think that's true. I think in the Hasidic community today, the Metzitza with the tube is unheard of, based on the work of the Satmar Rebbe, as well as other Gedolim. Again, the Klausenberg Rebbe also...
They also don't celebrate Yom HaTzmiut and Yom Yerushalayim.
Yeah, there's a lot of things the Satmar Rebbe doesn't do, yes. That's why I urge you all to read the rest of the book. Fascinating tidbit about the Satmar Rebbe's life, it was that when he picked Monroe to be his community, that was like his fourth option. There are many other communities that he wanted first to build up his own yeshuv, and one of them was actually Staten Island, which is ironic, because today Staten Island has a strong Hasidic community. But just for the record, if you wanted to move to Monroe, there were three conditions that had to be met. So I don't know if anyone would have moved in those years. First of all, your wife had to shave her hair, her head. That's a Satmar Minug. Second was, you're not allowed to read any secular or political magazines. And the third, you're not allowed to speak Hebrew. So the Rebbe was very against Hebrew. So I don't know if any of us would have made the cut to be of the first families in Monroe. I know I wouldn't have been, because I'm not opting to have my wife shave her head. But nonetheless, that is a well-known Satmar Chumra. It's a mistake. People think all Hasidim shave their heads. It's not true. Not all. Many. Satmar is one of the big communities where they don't enforce it, but it's like a hiddur if your wife shaves her head before the chasen. And again, the reason behind it is to ensure there's no chatzitza when she goes to the mikvah. It's not like this. The world convinces us because they want to de-beautify women. They want to make women look ugly. That's not the pshat. It's because they were concerned about chatzitzas that come up in the hair when you go to the mikvah, which is a halach concern. I'm not denying it. But nonetheless, that's not the practice custom for most of us. We don't require our wives to shave their head. In any case, that's the Atkan. Sorry?
You do it during Sfira also?
Yeah. Pashtus is yes. Because it's not done for tanug. It's not done for pleasure. But it's a discussion, the Paiskim, about women, stamaze, during Sfira and during the 3 weeks about shaving their hair or other parts of the body. We've spoken about it. Oh, okay. That's it. Just a reminder.
How about a man's beard?
What?
How about a man's beard? Does that also act as a chatzitza?
For what? There's no tefillah deraisa for a man.
They're very serious about their tefillah.
Yeah, again, the question is why they're so serious about their tefillah. Someone just told me a chiddush from one of the Hasidic Rebbe's that he was matir. This I couldn't imagine. He was matir someone to be turned on a shower Shabbos morning to be toivel tisha kabin because of corona. You couldn't go to the mikvah. So he was matir him to turn on the hot water in the shower and use tisha kabin. I thought that was a little out there, because the whole tevilah of tisha kabin is a question why we do mikvah today. That's a whole discussion. We're doing it because of Tekanis Ezra, or we're doing it because of Stamazay Extra Kedusha. But to be mad at someone to turn on the hot water in his shower Shabbos morning because he can't go to the mikvah, I thought that was a bit of a chiddush.
That's Chilul Shabbos Doraisa.
I would have thought so, yeah. That was my initial thought when I heard that. I was a little taken aback by that. I said, the guy told me you heard it on a share. I said, you might want to listen to that share one more time, because that sounds a little out there, that would be mutter on a Shabbos morning, so you can go to the mikvah to turn on the hot water in your shower. I thought that was very, very strange. But in any case... Maybe it depends how big. Again, the women's hair tends to be a lot longer and knotty than ours. Even the beard.
But again, I saw
the
natural growth.
No, the Shulchan Aruch talks about if the hairs get tied together. That's what we're worried about. There's some. It's hard to tell when the hairs get tied. It's kind. There's also in the Shulchan Aruch about it. At the end of Hilchas Nido, as Hilchas Chatzitza, Siman Kuf Tzadi Tes. It's a hard simon in Shulchan Aruch to read, but it's all these little things like the hair's getting tied, and they're getting wrapped together, and they're sticking together, all these types of things.
So that would be the beard as well?
Yeah, maybe. In theory, it could be.
We don't see that they shave the beard.
Right, because again, we don't have chatzit. Again, the other option is they'll tell you that shaving the beard is also necessary, so, as we've spoken about in the past. This Tuesday night, Rabbi said the shir is going to be discussing another corona-related shayla about benching goymel after corona. Again, I'm just urging for both men and women, because this sickness attacked both men and women. So I'd like to discuss, should both men and women bench goymel after hopefully recovering from coronavirus and feeling better? That's this Tuesday night. I got an interesting shiloh just on the topic of corona this past Thursday night. A fellow of mine in the shul whose wife was due, the question was, should you drive yourself to the hospital on Shabbos, or should you call an Uber to take you to the hospital on Shabbos? Now, normally it's a no-brainer. You don't drive on Shabbos. Driving on Shabbos is malacha deraisa. But the question is, going in an Uber today might be putting yourself at harm. So I spoke to two prominent paiskim, one Reb David Cohen of Brooklyn and one Reb Shmuel First of Chicago, Michael, your buddy, and they both told me that till this week, they were telling everyone to drive to shul, drive to the hospital on Shabbos with a shinoi, and do not go in the Uber. The question is, have things changed going forward because we, Baruch Hashem, are doing better? They didn't want to exactly weigh in on that. But I found it interesting that they all, both of these two rabbanim felt very comfortable saying that it's kedai to drive yourself to the hospital instead of going in an Uber because of the potential harm that you're putting yourself into when going into an Uber. Again, as Rabbi Oban was giving a webinar to rabbanim, and he pointed out how much chalokim of Torah came out because of Corona. So many new shilas that we've never... Look what Rabbi Asher Weiss wrote. He wrote, Kontrasim, shilas and tshuvas that we've never thought about in a million years. Now they're coming out and we have to deal with them, and we have to answer them, and we have to grapple with them. So again, not that it's a good thing that came out of a bad thing, but the mice, a lot of Torah came out from these shilas. The shilas that Rabbanim never had to deal with all of a sudden start to come out. So so the Goymel shilas is not really a new shilah. We'll see this Tuesday night. It really has nothing to do with Corona. It probably has more to do with the common flu or maybe even the common cold. But this Tuesday night we will discuss the shilah of benching Goymel after Corona, as well as the regular Wednesday night Chumashir on Parsha Shlach. Okay.
Just so you know, Ravosha did give a shir on benching Goymel, so you may want to check
he that. Did? I didn't see it. Yeah. I saw a written psak. I saw a written psak from him on it. He gave a whole shir on it?
An audio one I heard.
Really?
Once.
I didn't see it. Okay, it's.
I gotta find
it. Okay, if you find it, please let me know. I saw just in his writings in the Shalos and Tshuvas, I saw him write like one letter about it, one line, not too much, but I thought he would expand more. So I'm happy that there is a recording, and I would love to get my hands on it before Tuesday night, if possible. Okay, so let's get back into.
By the way, Rabbi, we're going so off topic,
yes,
today,
we do
more
best.
Than ever. I just want to add one thing. It's amazing when you said with all these Corona shalas, how many new chalukei Shulchan Aruch came up. It's also amazing how many rabbanim knew about it. I don't know if it was the Noi de Behuda, the whole thing about social distancing, how so many of them were just able to put their fingertips on it in 2 seconds. And I don't think that's something you could Google. It just shows you, you know, the vast amount of Torah that all these rabbanim and gedolim know, that they're able to get to these shalas in 2 seconds of what happened during previous plagues. I mean, who looks at those kind of shalas and tshuvas? These things. It's so far out there.
That's what makes these people great. They read every Shilas and Tshuvas. We only read the famous ones. They go through every Shilas and Tshuvas.
The ones that are Nogeya Tals.
Now, they read everyone. Now, they read everything, and they read every Hakdama to every Sefer. This is what makes Rav Shechter great. He reads everything. Everything that's in print, he reads. So if there's an abstract tshuva somewhere in the back of a sefer, which most of us skip, he read it, and he knows it, and he memorized it, and he knows how to put it to practical use. So yeah, it's an amazing thing. Baruch Hashem, as much as our generation is lacking, Baruch Hashem, we have leaders that have big shoulders. They know how to paskin. They feel comfortable. They're not embarrassed. They're not shy of their psukim. They stand by their psukim. Rabbi Shavai stood his ground, even though he thought everyone was wrong. He stood his ground, and sadly enough, he was right. And Rav Shechter in the beginning, and Rav Willig, they stood their ground in the beginning when everyone was against them, and they were right also. So at the end of the day, I think the Rabbanim that have big places in the communities, and in various communities, have really came through and showed us the importance of listening to our Gedolim and our doctors together. As we always say, you got to have the doctors and the rabbis working together. That's how we reach a very good maskan. Okay, Rabbi, so we're holding over here in the Beloz Demila. I know it's hard to remember, but we're still in the middle of the Gemara. Daf Kuf Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara reads like this. If you remember, we had a Mishnah where the Mishnah told us that you're supposed to do all the preparatory activity before the bris. Everything should get done before the bris when the bris is on Shabbos. But on Shabbos, the only thing you're allowed to do is the actual milah, the cutting, the priya, the metzitza. Everything else, the prep, should all be done before Shabbos. We spoke about this in the beginning of the perek, that if you can do the prep on Shabbos, it's not Deicha Shabbos. But the Mishnah said over there that if you didn't grind up the kamon, they used to have cumin that they used to give to the baby, so you had grinding, that's toichin, it's malach on Shabbos. So if you didn't grind it up on Shabbos, if you didn't grind it before Shabbos, so the Mishnah says, you have to grind it with a shinoi. Okay? As David Cohen told me when I spoke to him on Thursday night, he said, everything's mutter with a shinoi. Okay, so you do a shinoi. You drive the car with a shinoi, you drive the car with the side of your foot, whatever it is, maybe not safe, but it's definitely a shinoi than doing things the regular way. So the Mishnah says over here that if you didn't grind up the kamon before the Shabbos, so you grind it up with the shinoi and Shabbos. So the Gemara says like this, Tana Rabbanan, number one. Tana Rabbanan, Dvarim Shein Oisin L'Mila B'Shabbos, those things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos for a Mila, Oisin La B'Yomtif. You are allowed to do on Yomtif. Meaning, even though the Machshirei Mila, that's not permissible to be done on Shabbos, that could be done on Yom Tov. Such as, says the Gemara, Shoichikin lo kamon, you're allowed to grind up the kamon, v'torfin lo yayin v'shemen, and you're allowed to mix together yayin v'shemen. We mentioned this way back, this is probably going back months already, that the Mishnah said you're not allowed to mix yayin and shemen together on a plate. Why? So there's different opinions in the Rishonim. It looks like you're going to cook it, or other different opinions, but there's an issa de Rabbanim. So the Mishnah says that even though I'm not allowed to be tarif yayin v'shemen, I'm not allowed to mix together wine and oil on Shabbos for a milah, which was done to help the baby after the bris, but I may do it on Yom Tov. So what did the Braisa tell us? That those things that are prohibited on Shabbos are permitted on Yom Tov. So frank the Gemara, Amalei Abaye Leb Yosef, Maishna kama be Yom Tov? Why am I allowed to grind up the kama in Yom Tov? Because the chazi l'kteira, because I can always use it in a dish. Meaning what? It's a spice, cumin, it's a spice. So if I decide, I can either use it for the baby or I can use it for the child. So it's chazi l'kteira, and therefore it's ro'u and yom tif, and therefore it's mutter. Fakti gemara, yayin v'shemen chazi nami b'shabbos l'chayla, but yayin v'shemen is also ro'oi on Shabbos for a chayla. The Tanya, because we learned in a Braisa, ain't tarfin yayin v'shemen l'chayla b'shabbos. You're not allowed to mix yayin v'shemen for a sick person on Shabbos. Amar Reb Shimon Elazar b'shemen meir, af tarfin yayin v'shemen. You are allowed to mix yayin v'shemen. Amar Reb Shimon Elazar pa machas chash v'mei b'mei of. One time Reb Meir had a stomach ache, who b'kshenu l'trif la yayin v'shemen. We wanted to mix for him yayin v'shemen to make him feel better. V'loi hinichanu, but he didn't let us. Amar Lo, we said to him, d'varech yibatlu b'chayecha. Rebbe, your words are not going to be fulfilled in your lifetime. You are the one that's matter mixing Yayin v'shemen for a chayla. So let us mix the Yayin v'shemen for you, who's a chayla. So Amar Lon, who said to us, Afa pisha ani oimer kach, even though I'm mekel, v'chaveri oimrim kach, and my friends are machmir, miyomai my entire life. So I think Gemara, miyomai my entire life, loy melani libi lavra al devi chaveri. I never went against the words of my friends. Whatever that means, we'll have to talk about in a few minutes. Says the Gemara, who knew the machmer and afshei? Avul kuliyal mishari. He was only machmer for himself, but for the rest of the world, it's mutter. So what's the Gemara's kasha? You see that you're allowed to mix yayin v'shemen for a chayla on Shabbos. What type of chayla? Look, Rashi on the top number two. L'chayla she'ein boi sakana. For a chayla that has no sakana. So frank the Gemara here also. If I'm allowed to grind up the kamar and yom tif, because maybe I can put into a dish, so I should be allowed to mix the yayin v'shemen on Shabbos, because maybe I'll need it for a chayla she'en b'sakana. What is very wrong about this statement in the Gemara? What is very hard to understand about this Gemara?
Tochin's daraisa, refu is darabana.
But more than that, why are you allowed to do it on Yom Tov? Because on Yom Tov we have a principle called Hayel.
It's
Hayel. We have a cheshem called Hayel. Hayel mikli la'archim. Why am I allowed to do things on Yom Tov that I'm not normally allowed to do? One of the reasons is because I can always claim that maybe I'll have guests that will come and they need it. So I'm allowed to be mevashel on Yom Tov because maybe a guest will come and he'll want something. But you don't have that on Shabbos. There's no chayil on Shabbos. So let's see the Rashash number three. Says the Rashash. What's going on over here?
Why is Tochin allowed on Yom Tov? It's before Lisha.
Why is Tochin allowed? So what do we speak about when we talk? When we talk about Hilchos Yom Tov, I forgot a bit of what we said. That Tochin is... Toichin, that's
EF.
Rabbi, only if it's, even if it's EF Shalasis before?
Oh.
I think they say over here that's EF Shalasis before. I think that's what they say, the spices gets ruined. And that's why it's Mutter and Yom Tov. But the Rashash writes over here, number three. Let's look at the Rashash. Very important Rashash. Says the Rashash, nearly. What's the svar of the Gemara? That I'm allowed to grind up the Kamon and Yom Tov for the Bris because Chazi L'Kdeira. Because maybe I want to put it into a dish. So what, says the Rashash? Nearly the mitam the hoyo ka'asi Allah. That's what we call hoyo. Hoyo meaning that since there may be guests want it, this is one of the reasons in the Gemara why you know you Erev Tavshilin works. Why am I allowed to cook from Monday to the next? The answer is because maybe all of a sudden at 3 o'clock in the afternoon someone will show up and he'll want something to eat, so I'll have what to feed him. So I'm allowed to cook. So here also, maybe I'll need to put the kamoin into my dish. So I'm allowed to grind up the kamoin for the milo because maybe I'll want to use it into my dish. So he writes, Pluktas Rabba of Reb Chizda, Bezeh, Chenosh and Aramam, so he begged Bez Melchus Me'ila, Hoyo Veroy Lekadeir, because of Hachi Losh and Atorah Shulchan Aruch. So what's the svar over here? Again, the Gemara thinks that the reason why I'm allowed to grind up the kamoin for the bris is because I can technically use this kamoin for a suda, Lekadeir, I can use it for a dish. And therefore, Hazi, Hoyo Vechazi Lekadeir, Chazi Nami Lebris Mil. So what's the follow up to the Gemara? So then the Gemara's kasha is, okay, good. So let's do the same thing with Yayin v'shemen. I should be allowed to mix the Yayin v'shemen for the bris, because maybe I'll need it for a chayla. So Frek Taisus M'sachim number 4, Frek Taisus, it's a small print, Taisus asks, V'hashta da'amrit lo'asamach l'shkiyas ha'chamo, k'tpirishis v'im toimah, I amrin and hoyol, Im came bataltas komulecha Shabbos hoyl v'royl l'choyl yishesh basakana. Fractarius, one second. If you're telling me now that I'm allowed to do things because maybe a choyl will need it, so let's throw out all the 39 malachas. I'll be allowed to do everything I need on Shabbos because maybe a choyl will need it. That's not what our Gemara is saying. Our Gemara is saying is that what? I should be allowed to mix the Yayin v'Shemen for the Bris Milah on Shabbos because maybe a minute from now someone's going to knock on my door and say, I have a guy who's sick and he needs medicine. Give him medicine. So I should be allowed to do everything based on the principle of Hoyle. Hoyle v'chazi l'choyle. So Tosis answers
we no. Say the same story we say by Erev Tashilin.
There was.
Maybe there'll be guests, so, right?
Right. That's what we're assuming now. We're assuming that the reason right,
so,
why...
So what's the problem? Why is Tosis asking this? We do this by Erev Tashilin.
No, but he's saying you should be like this by Shabbos.
Yeah.
Tosis is saying you should come out now that on every Shabbos...
That's something that happens more regularly.
Right, so I mean, Tosis, our Gemara took a leap from Yom Tov to Shabbos. The first part of the Gemara we all could have lived with. The Gemara was saying that I'm allowed to grind up the Kamen on Yom Tov for a bris because maybe I'll need it for my dish. That's Hoyle. That's Hoyle. That's Mutter. I can do it. But now you want to jump for Shabbos. So Tosis Himsachim Batsim Bavarin says Kasha. Tosis says, you're going to tell me now that I'm allowed to do everything I want on Shabbos because maybe a Hoyle? So Tosis says, no. The Yishloima Kimon Lo Yishchichi Klau Lo Yaminon Hoyle. That was talking about a Hoyle Shiesh Boi Sakona. How often do you have a chayli sheyesh b'sakana? I can't do anything I want on Shabbos because maybe a chayli sheyesh b'sakana will walk in. What's the likelihood of a chayli sheyesh b'sakana? However, says the Rashash, back to the Rashash, the aim steer me mashikas about Tais Risham. For Ek the Rashash, why is it this Taisim Sachem not against our Gemara? Taisim Sachem just told us that we don't say hoyle for Shabbos because of a chayla. So what's the argumar's cash over here that we should say hoyle? Says the Rashash, the dafka chayli sheyesh b'sakana l'shay. Taisus Himsachim was saying, you know why we don't say Hoyle the Chazi l'Chayle? That's if you have a Chayle Shesh B'Sakana. Chayle Shesh B'Sakana. You don't have a Chayle Shesh B'Sakana every Shabbos. So you can't tell me that I'm allowed to do something on Shabbos because maybe a Chayle Shesh B'Sakana will walk in. However, says the Rashash, mixing Yayin Meshem is not good just for a Chayle Shesh B'Sakana. It's used even for a Chayle Shein B'Sakana. Chayle Shein B'Sakana, that's very common. So therefore, argued the Rashash that the Gemara's cash over here is that we taka should say hoyle by Shabbos and say that what? Since I may have a chayli sheyin by sakana walk into my house and need mixed yayin v'shemin, so we should all be allowed to mix yayin v'shemin under the pretense that maybe a chayli sheyin by sakana will walk in. Oh, so now I can mix the yayin v'shemin to perform for the bris milah. That's the Rashash's pshat in the Gemara. Now,
but maybe it depends. I understand the heter v'ochnefesh. If ochnefesh is chutra. Right,
100%. So this is why many Achrayim start to deal with this issue of, are we really going to say Hutra? Are we really going to say, we're going to say Hoyle by Shabbos also? Are we willing to extend and expand the din of Hoyle, Chazil Archim, by Shabbos also? Pashas is the din in Yom Tov. Because Yom Tov as is, you're allowed to cook. So now just a question of expanding it. That's a big shug. Again, I was back and forth, should we get into the sugya now or not? I decided that I want to keep going into the laws of the Milah because we're only three blood in. But it does need much more discussion that there is even a possibility, at least according to our Gemara, and it's Negei Halacha L'Maisa, Shulchan Aruch talks about it in Simin Shin Laman Aleph, but Halacha discusses it, to say Hoyle by Shabbos in certain situations to permit Malach on Shabbos under the premise of Hoyle. Now Rav Meir Simcha, the Or Sameach, has a different pshat in this Gemara. He doesn't learn like the Rashash. Rav Meir Simcha learns pshat in the Gemara over here is not because Hoyle le'chayla. He wants a title like this, that the whole Hoyle is questionable. Why? What's the Surah of Hoyle? I'm allowed to cook something on Yom Tov, even though I don't need it, because maybe guests will come. Well, maybe guests won't come. What's the likelihood? Rabbi Moshe Weiss in his shir about Erev Tavshilin, he said his entire life, all his years, he says he remembers only once someone ever came that needed a meal because they had a baby, and a whole story. Right? How often does someone come to your house on Yom Tov, a guest that has nothing to eat? Usually the guests that come to our homes are people that are already fed. So how chazi l'orchem is it really? So Rabbi Meir Simcha wanted to suggest, you're right. The kuma, meaning even if you don't hold of hoyel chazi l'orchem, in our Gemara it's much better. Why? Because over here, what's the kamon? The kamon is chazi l'kdeira. That makes more likelihood. I mean, statistically speaking, there's a more likelihood that you'll use the ground up cumin into your dish because the dish is in front of you. Masha inkein to have orchem. So Rav Meir Simcha thought like this: that pshat in the Gemara is that the hoyel over here is a better hoyel. The hoyel over here is by kamon. Since I see that I have dishes in front of me for Yom Tov, so the likelihood that I'll use the kamon is very strong, and therefore over here I'm allowed to say hoyel. So the same thing with the yayin v'shemen. Why? Because where is the chayla she ain by sakana? The mother. Every baby's mother is a chayla. So why can't I justify and say, Hari yesh cholo lefanenu? It's like saying, I have the dish lefanenu, I have a kedera in front of me. So for me to grind up the kamon and use it in a dish is not so far-fetched. So it says, Ramei Simcha, it's the same thing with the yayin v'shemen. For me to use the yayin v'shemen is not so far-fetched because I have a mother who's a cholo. So as the mother, I should be able to be mitarif the yayin v'shemen. That's the way Rav Meir Simcha wanted to learn the Gemara. Now, l'chayre, there's something that should bother all of us. A fundamental kasha on the Gemara is that if you're telling me now that you're allowed to mix yayin v'shemen for a cholo she'en by sakana, so why can't you just do it for the baby? Isn't the baby a cholo she'en by sakana? You're telling me now the Gemara is a whole kasha. That I should be allowed to mix yayin v'shemen for the baby because I'm allowed to mix yayin v'shemen for a cholo she'en by sakana. Hagufa! The baby should be a cholo she'en by sakana! So I should be allowed to mix the yayin v'shemen not with a lumdus of hoyol that maybe I could use it for a cholo she'en by sakana. I should be allowed to use it because I have a cholo lefaneinu. I have the baby.
No, because maybe there's a difference because here you're putting the baby into makam sakana by doing the bris. So by doing, you know, the other place, it was, you know, there already was a sakana, so the question is, what do you do? Here, at the end of the day, it's coming like at the same time. You're putting the baby into sakana.
Okay. So what I think you might be saying is a svara that I found over here, number 5. If you look at number 5 in the Sefer Panini Moshe, I'm not sure who the author is, but he writes, Sarach Bir, why did Gemara have to ask a kasha that I should be allowed to mix the yayin v'shemen just like I'm allowed to grind up the kamon? Halei afle loy kamon. Forget the kamon. Kasha tuva, I have a bomb kasha. The ishari litvif yayin v'shem l'tzari chayli shem v'sakona. You just got finished telling me from Rav Meir. Rav Meir held that you're allowed to mix yayin v'shemen for chayli shem v'sakona. So if so, kasha gen ishari litvif l'tzari chamila shesh v'sakona. Isn't it a kasha gen I should be allowed to do it for a baby? A baby should be no worse. So he writes, v'ulai tzarech loymer. So maybe pshat like this. The lahakshes mitrei for greda la'iefshem. The Gemara couldn't have just asked, why can't I mix? Meaning the Gemara could have opened up like this. I should be allowed to mix the yayin v'shemen for the bris. Why? Because I'm allowed to mix the yayin v'shemen for a chayla she'en by sakana. So kol shegen, I should be allowed to mix it for the baby. That couldn't have been the opening kasha. Why not? So he explains, kiven the mila chometfei, mila's mo chomer, to have a literate me'erev Shabbos. Kiven the yoda, the yom olamachar. Mila, you can anticipate. You have 8 days to get ready for it. So why don't you first wake up on Shabbos and realize, oh, yeah, I forgot to mix the yayin v'shemen. Do it earlier. So maybe, ain't a chanami, the mila is considered a chayla, but maybe, I think similar to what Michael was getting at, that over here you had warning, you had time to prep for this. So why would we allow you to violate the Shabbos when you could have done it before? To have the litvah of Mary Shabbos, given the other, the yimul moch, mashenkin, b'shar chayla. You can't control the chayla shem esakana. A guy wakes up in the morning with a fever, what are you supposed to do? You can't control that, so that's why you're allowed to do it. But, so what was the Gemara's kasha then at all? But the Gemara's kasha was a follow-up. Now that you told me that I'm allowed to grind up the kamoin, after Ev Shalosh Shaykh came Erev Yomtiv, why are you allowed to grind up the kamoin? You should have grinded it up before. The answer is you're allowed to. Oh, so fight the Gemara. So now I should be allowed to be Matar from the Ayim Shemin also. I mean, the Gemara's kasha was a follow-up. Till the Gemara proved the case of kamoin, I would have thought to myself that we penalize you. If you could have done it before, you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos. But now that I see that you're allowed to grind up the kamon on Yom Tov, even though kamon could have been grinded up before Yom Tov because of a lamdis, hoyel v'chazi. So say the same thing. By the Ayin v'shemen also, we should say hoyel v'chazi. That's the Gemara's kash.
Well, maybe you can say the difference is before you did the bris or after you did the bris. I mean, without the sugya, you think, well, maybe if you did the bris, then you could do it. But to grind up or mix beforehand, you couldn't. And that's what the Gemara is saying, that even if you haven't done the bris yet, you can do it.
Okay, that's a possibility. We spoke about this. The question is, are we talking about before? It's Machlokes Rishonim, if the Mishnah is talking about before or after the bris.
It's by Shtapu Chamime.
Right, right. That's what we're going to talk about. That's the next Mishnah.
So this is a little bit different, where you could have, there was an accident happened.
That's right. That's exactly. That's the next Mishnah, which I'm trying to push ourselves to get to, hopefully by next week. This whole thing about boiling up the hot water for the baby and the water spilled and all that stuff. So that's the shaila over here, how to learn the Mishnah, if it's before the bris or after this. Many Rishonim argue. If it's Taisa says, if it's after the bris, the baby's sakoni, you got to do everything. So many Rishonim know that this Gemara is talking about before the bris. But it's Taka Machlokes Rishonim. Just on a number 6, I just thought was interesting. Maisa, what's Pshat Rav Meir? Why would Rav Meir be Machmir if he personally held to be Mekel? Right, Rav Meir said about himself that I was Machmir, even though I held its mutter, but my friend held it also. So what's that all about? So I found the Birkas Avram of Avram Etlinger, Rosh Hashivan Kol Teiri, he writes, number 6, he says, V'tzarech Bir, Me'achesh U'sover Kein, U'pasa Kein, Ma'zeh Shalatz Me'ichmer. Why would you be Machmir for yourself? If you go through the Sugi and you conclude that X and Y is mutter, just because your friends disagree with you, you're going to just bend in? Well, what's that about? Harry Lahilosophic. It's not like he was Mesopic. Rav Meir Paskin that this is the way it's supposed to be. And he told other people this is the way they should be night. So why should you be machma for yourself? And this is something we find very often. Many Rabbonim will tell people X and Y, but personally they'll be more machma. If it's right, it's right. If it's wrong, it's wrong. What's going on over here? So it's a good kasha, and it happens all the time. Many Rabbanim will tell people they can do things. So a pashup shot is because they feel like, you know, I can be machmir because I can handle it. But you know, it's easier for you to be mekel. So I don't know if I can't put my chumras on you. But the Birkas Avraham writes an interesting svari. He writes, ulchayr yeshleimer sheish b'zan hagas anova. It's anivus. Oy shleye negei b'dover lekulazu. He didn't want to be a baldover. They don't want people to say that he was only mekel, so it should help him out. However, from the Gemara, it sounds like he actually really took his friend's words seriously. Even though he passed in mutter, but the Maaseh, since he has friends that were machmir, he wasn't 100% sure. But it's an interesting svara. What the Gemara means by this, that he should be machmir if he personally feels it's okay. Why should you be machmir even for yourself if you personally feel that it's all right? If you have enough chutzpah, I'm not urging you to do this. If you have a rav that you're very close with, sometimes when you want to ask a question, don't ask mutter us or ask, would the rav do this or not? It takes a lot of chutzpah, and rabbanim hate when they're asked this question, because you're totally putting them on the spot. But if you want to know what they do, that's how you ask the question. Because if you ask the mutter us, they'll tell you, it's mutter. Now, when you ask it differently, you say, would the rav do this? That's mamash diskemar. Even though Rav Meir held it was mutter, he himself wouldn't do it. Now, rabbanim hate when you ask them that question. Because then they have to get personal and they have to tell you what they do or don't do. So as a Rav, I ask you not to do that. But if you ever want to get down and understand what a Rav really thinks about something, and not just giving you a cooler because he thinks that's what you want to hear, or he thinks that's what you can handle, tell him, well, what would the Rav do this? Or what would the Rav do? Or what would he do in that situation? That's how you really get into the kishkas. Guaranteed the rabbi will not talk to you for a long time if you do that to him. So I urge you to be careful with that tactic. But that's Mamash Diskemar. If you want to understand why he passed in that way,
plus also, Rabbi, I'm not looking for chumras. I don't know about everyone else.
Okay, I'm just saying, sometimes there are certain topics that you want to understand what he really holds, not just what he's telling you. Sometimes Rabbanim tell you things because they think that's what's best for you, they think that's what you can handle. But if you want to get his opinion on something, what this specific Rav holds, you ask him, well, what would you do in this situation? And most Rabbanim will not answer you unless they feel close to you. But again, I'm not urging you guys to pick fights with your local Rabbanim, but it's just an interesting idea if you're curious. Like, you know, something like you're curious about, that's how you get the real answer. Okay. In any case, back to the Gemara. So the Gemara is holding out a shtaka kasha. The Gemara wants to know, why am I not allowed to mix the yayim v'shemen? Because hoyel v'chazi l'chayla. So the Gemara answers. The Gemara says, hasam over there for a chayla she'im v'sakana le'boi lika. You don't need lika. Hacha boi lika. But over here you need lika. What does that mean? It's like Rashi, tap Rashi. It's like Rashi. Hasam gabi shar choylim. When it comes to a regular choyla, zagrashi loy boy lika. The tarfay lo orva yofa yofa. You don't have to mix it very well. You can have the yayim v'shemen on the same plate. They don't have to get so mixed together for it to accomplish. But when it comes to the mila, it has to be mixed very well. So the procedure is going to be different. Meaning you can't tell me that I should be allowed to mix the yayim v'shemen because maybe a choyla should come. Because the way I mix the yayim v'shemen for the baby at the bris is a very, very big mixing, very thorough mixing. That mixing is not needed for a chayla. So I can't justify what I'm doing for a chayla because what I'm doing is not what a chayla needs. That's how Rashi seemed to have learned the Gemara. So then the Gemara follows up with a kasha. So fine. So hachanami na'aved v'loy lelich. Fine. So don't do such a good mixing. It's better than nothing. Says the Gemara. Hanadik tani. Is that nice with nasbi? Is that nice with nasbi? Yes. That's exactly what the Mishnah said. You're allowed to put the two things next to each other. You can't mix them rigorously because they don't need that. But you can put them next to each other just like you would for a chayla she'en bo yisakon. That's the way Rashi learns the Gemara. The Ran in number 7 learns the Gemara differently. He learns the Gemara slightly different. Number 7 he writes, Pirish. Dime'ikara kasayka daitach dezebif ne'atzmaik. It says in the Mishnah that if you can't mix the two on Shabbos, so you put each one in its place. So Rashi learned, it means you put each one on its place and let gravity bring the two together. The Ran learned, no, that when it said in the Mishnah you put each one on its place, means that you put each one separately on the baby. You put the Shemen on the baby, then you put the Yayin on the baby. So the Ran, Pirish the Mikarkas, Akadayat, the Zevet, Nehasa, Almakim, Makikama. You put it on the wound, Veloy Bikara. You can't put the two in the plate. The Achshav Bal Ashmeino. Now the Mishnah is telling me the Nosan Zeba Atme v'Zeba Atme ala Karakama. You can taka put the two of them in the plate together, but v'lo yitarfim b'yodah. You can't do mixing at all. Elis Arvu Me Alehem. They have to be mixed on their own. Kivin she'en oisim b'yodaim. Since you're not doing it b'yodaim, Rashi learned you could mix them be a dime. Just you can't mix them very thoroughly be a dime. While according to the Ran, you have to just put the two of them on the plate and let gravity mix the two together. Okay, let's move on to another shtickle gemara over here that is interesting and lumdish as well. Number 9. This is the Amud and Kufla Madala. I skipped a lot of the Amud if you look up in the Gemara, because the Gemara is going through all these different medicinal remedies that come from Abaya. But this is what I want to start. Dr. Gemara, Omar Abaya, says Abaya, Omrali Aim, my mother told me. Now, everyone knows Abaya did not have a mother. Abaya was orphaned at a young age. There's a fascinating shiur, if you want to listen online, from Rabbi Beryl Wine, one of my favorite historians in the world. Is Rabbi Beryl Wine has an entire discussion about Rava and Abaya's life. It's a fascinating shiur about their childhood, their upbringing, their background, their parents, their financial situation. So it's well known that Abaya was an orphan. Abaya was actually very poor until he got married, and then he got wealthy, then he lost two wives. Abaya had a very pretty wife. They say, okay, whatever. A lot to learn about the Amoraim's life. But in any case, so in Kedushim, the Gemara tells us that Abaya never had a mother. He had what's called someone who took care of him. So when he says Amrali Aim, he doesn't really mean his biological mother, but he really means someone who took care of him. Okay, in any case, I urge everyone to listen to that chair. It's on YouTube, Rabbi Beryl Wine, history classes about Abaya and Rava. Very, very fascinating. In any case, says the Gemara number 9. Omar Abaya. Abaya said, Amrali Aim, my mother told me, Hayanuka the Sumuk. If you have a baby who's Sumuk, what does it mean, a baby who's Sumuk? Says the Gemara, Dakati lo ibla bay dma, that the blood did not yet get absorbed into his body. He's a sumka. Rashi says, "Kol bisrei edoim." His entire body is red. He has a red complexion, which means that the body did not absorb where it needs to go. So, what do you do with such a baby? Says the Gemara, "Lirsechilei." You should wait. Adi ivla ba dma. Wait until the blood gets absorbed, where it settles where it's supposed to go. Then vilamule, and then you should give him a bris mila. Okay. You're supposed to wait. Don't do the bris now. Then the Gemara says, "Vayter diyoruk." Let's say you have a baby who's yoruk, a baby who's green. What does it mean, a baby who's green? Again, same idea. You can tell that the blood is not circulating properly. Says the Gemara, you should wait. Wait until the blood goes where it needs to go, and then you should do the bris. So you delay the bris. The Tanya, we looked at a brisa. Amar Reb Nosson, Pamachas halachti lekrachayam. I once went to one of the villages by the water, one of the sea towns. Ubasi isha achas afana, and a lady came to me. Shemala b'narishan umay. She gave a bris to her first son and he died. Now look at the lashon of the Gemara. Shemala b'narishan. She gave a bris to her first son. I thought women aren't allowed to do bris mila. How do you read this Gemara? Shemala b'narishan. She gave a bris to her first son. Okay, we'll have to talk about it. Umeis, and then the baby died. Sheni, umeis, second baby and died. Shlishi, the third baby. Hey, Viyasa, Lefanai, she brought the baby to me. Reisa, I looked at the baby. Shei Adam, I saw the baby was red. The baby had this reddish complexion. He had this sumka. He was sumak. So what happened? So I told the lady, Amartile, I told her, Himtinile, wait, Achiyivla Badame, wait till the blood gets absorbed. Himtinile, she waited, Achiyivla Damai, Umala, Oisai, and then she gave him a bris, the Chaya, and the baby lived. They named the baby after me. Beautiful. They named the baby after me. Then the Gemara tells another story. Shuf pamachas halachni v'dinas kaputkia ubasi isha achas afanai shemila shemala b'nai rishan umeis sheni umeis shlishi heviyas afanai v'isiv shahu yaruk. The other version, the green version. So again, hitzatzti ba v'leisi badam bris. I looked and I saw there was no blood. I told him, Tani la chiyibol by dumb. Wait till the baby has blood flow. Vim tani la, they waited. They gave the baby a bris. V'choya, the baby lived. V'yikarin, shemoy, nasan, ababli, alshmi. And they named the baby after me. Okay. So what do you see from these gemaras? That there's certain ailments that the baby can have that causes the baby to be unfit for the bris mila. You have to delay the start of the bris mila. Now, and I am not a doctor, nor am I a moil, so I'm not going to get into all the technical stogia of jaundice and this, that, and the other, what the moil knows, what the doctor knows. But just from the Gemara, it's interesting. There's a couple of interesting hours from this Gemara. First of all, let's see Rashi number 10. Look, Rashi. The sumuk, kol bisrei edem, the whole body was red. Like ibla be dmaya be bisrei, the blood did not get absorbed in the flesh. The achshav kol domei motzi bein ol lebasar, the blood is found on the superficial level. The baby will just bleed out. Again, I don't know if this is true today scientifically, medically, I don't know. Says Rashi, wait to do the bris. The case with Reb Nosson is he went to the baby, so the baby doesn't have blood. She was worried. If the baby doesn't bleed, the baby will not be able to have a bris. So what happens? Re'isi shehu yara katsatzti bavloi hedambris. Tadli gri'usa. So Rashi, there's two problems with a baby that doesn't have blood. Chada, the imayole loinafik minei dama. Blood won't come out. And what's wrong if blood doesn't come out? Rashi, v'atof es dam bris mitzvah. Rashi's learning that if a baby does not bleed out his bris milah, it's a shayla fizyoyitz to the mitzvah. Why? Because atof es dam bris mitzvah. Part of the milah is blood should come out. The chesed says in the pasuk Navi, gam es bedam brischa. Now we spoke a lot about atof es dam bris. And we actually spoke about this Rashi, if anyone remembers. That Rashi seems to learn that Hatavas Dambris is not just a way of fixing an incorrect Mila, but Hatavas Dambris is a chelik of the actual Maisa Mila. Every Mila has to have blood come out of it. And Rav Moshe Paskin did a tshuva, that if you come up with a clamp where no blood comes out, Rav Moshe Paskin, based on this Rashi, you're not Yetzim Mila. Because every Mila needs to have a Tavas Dambris. So if the blood doesn't come out, you're not Yetzim Mitzvah. So Rashi says there's two problems over here. One problem is, if the baby doesn't bleed, you're not Yetzim Mitzvah, Hatavas Dambris. The second thing is you're going to make the baby dangerous. It's dangerous because the baby doesn't yet have blood. Now, based on this Rashi, I put it on the second sheet. We'll just jump there for a second, jump right back. That Minchas Ariel explains something fundamental. If you learn that the baby needs to bleed out of bris milah, now we can answer a basic kasha. What's a basic kasha? Why is milah chilul Shabbos? So we learn because when you cut the baby, the blood comes out. I don't want the blood. The blood is only a byproduct. Which you think the male wants to get blood all over his hands? No. The male needs to cut the foreskin. And it needs to pull back and it needs to suck out the blood. The bleeding the rest of the bleeding is all, I don't need that. I would love for it not to be there. So why is Mila B'Shabbos considered Nisadir Raisa? Because of the bleeding, it should be all considered Malacha Shein Tzvich L'Gufa. So he explains in number 21, he says, Mevo Medevei Rashi, the Ika Mitzvah of Mila Sheyatzadam. Part of the mitzvah is the blood should come out. Now we explain why is Mila B'Shabbos considered Chol Shabbos. I need a pasuk to permit it. The Malacha is just getting the blood out. Now we mentioned there is other Rishayim that hold it might be Goizes, it might be the cutting of the foreskin is Goizes, it might be other Malachas, but Pashtas we assume it's Dam. I am Cain. He said, I understand. If the blood is not part of the mitzvah, Im Cain Arehu Mekalkel. So the bleeding is just destructive. There's no fixing. And if you hold Malach Shetzvich Leguf as potter, so why do you need a pasuk in the Torah to permit Mila B'Shabbos? The Torah is, but according to this Rashi, everything is Gishma. Because part of the mitzvah is the Hitzaz Dam. It's no longer just an unnecessary byproduct. It's a very necessary byproduct. It's a very necessary byproduct. And therefore, according to this Rashi, now we understand why it's taken not Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, why it's not in the Kalka, because it's Misakin. Because part of the Mitzvah Samila is not only fixing the Chaticha, but it's also the Yetzir Saddam as well. Okay, Rabbi said there's more to get to.
Chovel is one of the exceptions.
That's correct. But the Gemara says Mila is the exception. The question is, why is Mila the exception?
It's the exception.
Right, question is, why? But, okay, Rabbi, I apologize. I have my son's Zoom see him to attend. So we're going to have to cut things a little short here. Mr. Shem, next week we will continue discussing this topic and hopefully get into the topic of washing the baby after the meal. But we need to talk to Lina more next week about when the baby recovers from these ailments, do you still have to wait 7 days? Or do you do the bris milah right away? There's a Gemara in Shabbos that says if a baby has a fever, you don't do the bris milah the moment the baby gets better. Many of you may have come across this in your experiences with bris milah, that sometimes you have to wait an additional time beyond the baby's recovery. You have to wait another 7 days. So Blin Ed will talk about that from a alumnus standpoint next week in Mr. Shem, and we'll get into some more of the Inyonei HaMilah.